All right, welcome back inside the New Orleans Convention Center. Zach Gelb here with you on Radio Row. We're getting you set for the big game, Super Bowl 59. And if I knew my next guest was going to be wearing his jacket, I would have.
You would have worn
so
yours,
well.
Man. You'd be looking good in a starter satin Crown Royal jacket right now.
For a radio host, I think my shirt today looks pretty damn good.
You know, I think it does look good.
But I do have my starter jacket, Crown Royal, in the hotel lobby. There's a big event on Saturday that I'm going to.
Yeah.
But appreciate you stopping on by. How you been?
Yeah, been really good. You?
So, fantastic. Let me start you off with the Hall of Fame, because I live in New York, and there's always this debate about Eli Manning. I think he's a Hall of Famer. I don't know if he'll be a first ballot Hall of Famer. Do you think Eli should be a first ballot Hall of Famer?
Yeah, I'd say this. I mean, when you look at the body of work, obviously Eli played a long time. And playing for one team, I think, says a lot as well. And in a market like New York. Man, two-time Super Bowl champ. Beat Tom Brady with both of those. I mean, look, he was the Iron Man, too, from the perspective of, you know, longevity and durability. You know, really, I don't think he ever missed a game because of injury, you know. It doesn't mean he didn't have them. He absolutely did. So, look, I think when you look at the body of work, he had a really, really impressive career.
So we were actually talking about you the other day because I saw that Coach Saban was on with Channing Crowder and Ryan Clark and Fred Taylor at the Pivot. And I say it's the greatest what if in the history of sports. If the Dolphins would have just cleared you and you would have gone there, you would have had direct competition with Tom Brady inside the AFC. Saban probably stays with the Dolphins, Alabama, even the Saints storyline. Do you ever, it worked out for you, clearly. You become one of the great quarterbacks of all time, and you win a Super Bowl, and you're beloved in this city. But do you ever wonder what would have happened if you did go to Miami?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty wild to think of the what-ifs, you know? That was at a time when, you know, look, the Patriots had just come off of, three Super Bowl victories, you know, in what, 02, 04, 05. That Brady-Belichick thing was, you know, clicking. The irony is, you know, here's Saban, who was kind of a Belichick disciple, in a lot of ways. Had coached for him with Cleveland Browns, had obviously had a ton of success through college. I played against him at Michigan State 3 years, and then he goes to LSU, wins a national championship, and then becomes head coach of the Dolphins. But now he's in the same division as the Patriots, you know. And then, you know, me, I played against Tom Brady in college, you know, when he was at Michigan, I was at Purdue. And, you know, had I become, you know, Saban's quarterback, you know, it could have been some interesting storylines. But, look, I think it all worked out. Obviously, Saban and his career at Bama. And then, you know, my journey here to New Orleans, which, you know, truly was a calling for me and my wife, and having a chance to play with Sean Payton, for Sean Payton, who was a guy who really believed in me at a time when, you know, I needed it most, you know. I mean, he was very clear at the start of free agency, like, you're our guy, you know, and I have no doubts that you're going to be able to come back from the shoulder injury, and I know it's going to take some time, and, you know, we all got to work through that, but, you know, you're our guy, and we're going to build this offense around you. Gave me a ton of confidence, and, you know, we were able to build something pretty special here for a long time.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I'm glad that you bring up Sean, because I remember doing those shows on draft night, and there was a lot of people surprised with the pick at 12 in Bo Nix, because a lot of people just didn't have him going that early. But the big takeaway from that was Sean found his next Drew Brees. He found his next quarterback. Since you took, right, with Sean, the highest level you could go, and you had an all-time great career, what is that like for you when you're at the point now where Sean's with somebody else and they're saying, okay, this could be his Drew Brees in Denver?
I mean, look, I see a reinvigorated, you know, rejuvenated Sean Payton. You know, look, he had an incredible run here with the Saints, you know, with me as his quarterback for every year except for one, you know. And, you know, he steps away just to kind of recalibrate, and, you know, then gets the opportunity in Denver, which is kind of like, hey, you know, we get to build this thing from the ground up again. A really prideful, storied organization, but, you know, you can, in this league, man, you got to go find your cue, you know, and who's going to be your quarterback. And it seemed like Sean got the guy that he wanted, despite having, you know, the 12th pick and getting the sixth quarterback off the board. Like, that was his guy. I mean, truly, you know, Sean is going to do his own evaluation, and he's not going to listen to anybody else. Like, he's just, he has a way of player evaluation where he can see a guy and he just immediately has a vision for him, you know, based on what he knows he's going to be capable of, how he's going to assimilate into the offense or the defense, into the team dynamic. And it's one of his great strengths, is being able to, I think, evaluate players in that way. And he obviously saw something in Bo that made him his guy, and he was able to get him at the 12th pick miraculously. And I think you saw you know, Bo Nix's maturation throughout the year and the way that offense opened up and just the way they built confidence. And, you know, you got to think the future's pretty bright there with those two.
Drew Brees here with Dustin Half of Crown Royal. Is it crazy to you because, right, you had such a successful career. Peyton Manning has had such a successful career. Aaron Rodgers towards the end of his career. Like, those are three great quarterbacks, top 10 quarterbacks, top 15 quarterbacks of all time. But I was talking about the other day, someone asked me, you know, who's the three best quarterbacks to ever play the game? And I said, Brady's one, Montana right now is two, and then I did put Mahomes already at three to see how quickly, from a history standpoint, with so much career still to go where Mahomes is already at, is that just wild to you already?
Yeah, I mean, what the guy's been, what was this? This was year eight for him.
Yeah.
But seven as a starter, you know, and so in 7 years as a starter, he's played in five Super Bowls and potentially, you know, going for a fourth and a three-peat, which is unprecedented, never been done with this sport. So, I mean, right away, and based on just what we're all seeing with our own eyes too, you know, regardless of the statistics, you'd say, you know, he certainly belongs in the category, you know. I think there is a longevity component to this, you know. Like, you look, Brady played 23 years. Obviously, Montana played a long time. And really, Montana, I'd say, was, I think, the guy that a lot of us looked at as youngster. I know he was Brady's guy. You were growing up in Northern California, San Mateo. And, me being a Texas kid, it was funny because there was that Cowboy-Niners dynamic, you know, and I was a Cowboys fan as a kid. But at the same time, I'm looking at Joe Montana like, man, that's kind of my guy as far as stature.
Sure.
And, you know, not the biggest, not the strongest arm, you know, all these things. And yet, man, just methodical, right? Just precision. And so I garnered a lot of inspiration from Joe growing up. I think the longevity thing and doing the body of work, you know, doing it over an extended period of time at a very, very high level, that consistently, to me, that is what greatness is. It's that high level of production consistently over a long period of time.
Now, on the other side, when you get Jalen Hurts, Drew Brees, do you feel like he's disrespected as a quarterback? Because I feel as if everyone praises everyone around him rather than give him his due for what he's been able to do pretty much 4 years as a starter and having a pretty successful rate going to two Super Bowls.
Yeah. Look, it's really impressive. And I definitely think there's a chip on his shoulder, you know. And
that goes back to
Bama. Yeah, look, I think he does a great job of being kind of tactful with that, you know. You can kind of see it in his eyes. You know, he seems like he's somewhat of a quiet leader. Like, you know, obviously he speaks up when he needs to, and guys respect him when he does. But he just seems like one of those guys who's very poised, you know, and under control, and, man, knows what he's got to do, has this vision for where he's going to be, where he wants to be, and, man, he's on his way. I love his journey. He's a Texas kid. I was a Texas kid. Yeah. You know, goes to Bama. That early success, you know, as a starter, starting as a true freshman, playing in the national championship against Clemson, right? And then all of a sudden that whole situation with Tua, where now he's a backup, and, you know, you got to swallow your pride a little bit, and yet, you know.
And stayed the next year.
He stayed. That's what I'm saying. He stayed. And then, yeah, exactly. Comes in, and basically they don't win the national championship that year without him.
Yeah.
And then transfers to Oklahoma, has a phenomenal senior year, you know, gets them in the top four. And then, you know, but still, like, every step of the way, it's like, hey, drafted in the second round. Why not the first? You know, and so I think he definitely carries a chip on his shoulder, and I think that served him well.
I don't know if you know yet, but I hope that we find out tonight that Antonio Gates gets in the Hall of Fame, because I thought, hey, the process is the process, but to me, it was bull crap that he didn't make it last year.
It's look, to me, it's an absolute no-brainer. I understand that, man, the Hall of Fame voters have a really, really tough job, because you can make a strong case for everybody who's on that list. But specifically to Antonio Gates, he's statistically, he is the most prolific tight end in NFL history, right?
No one needs to justify.
And I think, like, look no further than, go talk to some of the greatest tight ends of all time. Go talk to Tony Gonzalez. Go talk to Gronk. Talk to Kelsey. Listen to them talk about Antonio Gates. Like, so many of those guys are like, man, I used to watch that guy. Like, I aspired to be like that guy, right? Like, to me, somebody asked me to define what are the qualities of a Hall of Fame player. I think you look at the body of work, you know, you can look at the statistics, you look at the accomplishments, but I think you also have to ask yourself something like, talk to people who either coached against him or had to play against him or played the same position, and get their feedback. And if the answer is, like, man, he was the one guy we were always worried about, or he's the one guy I wanted to be like, or, and then the other question is, did this guy do something to revolutionize the game? Did he change the game? Antonio Gates changed the game for the tight end position. We were the first ones in San Diego when I was playing with Gates to split out the tight end as a receiver to the single receiver side. He was covered by a corner, and he would get open consistently, right? Like, that revolutionized the game. I go to New Orleans, and we started doing that with Shockey. We started doing that with Jimmy Graham. Gronk would do that in New England. So, like, truly revolutionized the game for the position. To me, that criteria right there has him as a shoe.
And I'm 30 years old, kid growing up on Long Island. There's no reason for kids to have Antonio Gates jerseys. Antonio Gates, LaDainian Tomlinson, Ray Lewis, and Chad Johnson
were
probably the four most popular non-giant jerseys growing up on Long Island that people would wear. Tell us what you're doing today on behalf of Crown Royal.
Yeah, so this is awesome. Crown Royal's been the official whiskey sponsor of the NFL here for the last 4 years, but they've been a huge supporter of our foundation, the Breeze Dream Foundation, in all of our efforts here in Louisiana, helping to build healthcare facilities in underserved communities around the state, helping to build affordable housing as part of a public-private partnership with the city of New Orleans, job skills training program. So, man, they've been a huge supporter of our foundation. We appreciate that so much. They also have the Crown Royal rig that is showing up, which I don't know if you've seen this, but like two massive whiskey barrels that sit on the back of this 18-wheeler truck. But they're actually packing purple bags that people can come and pack, send to military overseas, which is awesome. Also, you can buy this starter. Oh, you know what? Wait a minute. I think, you have one at the room, right?
Yeah.
You can actually buy this satin starter jacket with the Crown Royal and NFL logos on it down at a pop-up in the quarter with all the proceeds going to the Foundation for Louisiana. So pretty awesome.
Drew, great to see you.
Yeah, man, you too. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
All right.